to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan. It is September 11th, 2022.
What do you got, Aaron?
Well, yeah, don't get me started.
Okay. My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pappe Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Go up there and see them. They've got everything John Deere. If they don't have it, they can get it for you. They've got like 110 locations to choose from. So, like I say, if they don't have an inventory, they'll find it for you. Or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at pappemachinery.com.
There you go.
There you are.
And, yeah, I didn't answer because, I don't know, I drove past the studio already, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are you doing? It's like, well.
I had to give her directions this morning.
He's, yeah, that never happens. He's like, we just passed it. Only been doing it for, what, 13 years?
Yeah, 13 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every Sunday morning. So, Ron and Patty Plummer here to talk about something coming up in Reading. On Tuesday, the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're listening to this on the archive and or you don't live in Reading, you just get some coffee. It's going to take you 2 minutes, and then we'll get back to what we were doing before.
Exactly, exactly.
All right, fire away, you guys.
Thank you so much for having us. Ron and I are really happy to be with you here, especially on September 11th. This is a big day for so many reasons, and so monumental as we look ahead of, as far as a community, what we want to do as we the people. And so an opportunity is coming to us here on Tuesday, Dr. Douglas Frank, who was actually at the original symposium in 2020 with Michael Lindell, and he saw the numbers. He saw the algorithms from the very beginning. And so now he has numbers for all the counties across the nation, basically. And he has spent the last 2 months with Seth Keschel. They've traveled throughout California. And now they have the numbers for Shasta County. So we're wanting to present that to everyone to come and hear him on Tuesday at 621 Twinview Boulevard in Reading. It's actually, if you find Waterworks Park, the road that's just west of Waterworks Park, you drive to the top of the hill and you'll be at Hillcrest. No, Hillside Church at 621 Twinview. And the doors open at 5:30. He'll be there at 6. And he has a presentation that will absolutely jaw-dropping because now we know for sure that the machines can no longer be used. What has happened to us has taken decades to get here. And now it's our Red Sea moment, and we're not going to use the machines any longer.
So have they decided to not use the Dominion machines now? Or
in some kind of counties, they have.
Yeah.
And so here we are, and it's going to be an opportunity for not only our Board of Supervisors on Tuesday morning, he's going to be there presenting to them, and then all of our elected officials going to have some time with our sheriff, and also possibly Kathy Darling. She says she's really busy that day. I said, that's okay. We're going to be on standby, and we'll be available.
Cool. Nice. Because, yeah, that's really where the whole thing, the rubber meets the road, is with the clerk.
Yep, yep. That's it.
I think one of the things that's happened over the years is that, number one, as a population, we've been conditioned just to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Actually, no one knows the rules.
But you make them up as you go, right?
Right, but I mean, people don't know the rules.
They don't know the rules.
And so when it comes to voting, I mean, in 2020, most people had no idea that the Secretary of State in the state of California didn't do what the Secretary of State at the federal level did.
Right.
They were unaware of what the Secretary of State really did.
Right.
And a lot of people have been voting for a clerk for their whole life as an adult voter. But there's usually one person running. It's usually the same person in a lot of places, which isn't a bad thing. But they didn't know what they did.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, when the election went all sideways and people had questions, they were calling, like, their members of Congress, you have to go and do something. And it's like, you do realize the federal government isn't in charge of elections, right? No.
Yeah.
People didn't know.
No, I know.
Legislators, right.
They didn't know the mail-in ballot had to be taken to the polls or they'd be put on provisionals. I mean, there are a lot of things that they must have learned in school and then just completely forgot, I guess.
Exactly.
They've been working a long time to set this up, and now it's all in place, and no matter what people do, and I would say a good portion of people just throw their hands up and go, well, we don't know what to do.
Right.
Right.
And I think we've come down to a spot where if we continue to use the machines, we've lost everything. We've lost our country.
Sure.
And that's
really
what Dr. Frank says, too. He says, when the people finally understand what's happened to us and how everything has been stolen from us with the machine, with the mail-in ballots, all these different efforts, they will take action.
Sure.
So rather than complaining, we're giving people an opportunity to get the information. We're doing canvassing and we're gathering the phantom votes. We saw them yesterday. There's a bunch. We have a lot of evidence of fraud right here in our own county. And that's why Dr. Frank has chosen to come to Shasta County. He's like, oh my gosh, it's thick and wide. You guys have got to get this information. And for some reason, all 3,000 plus counties across the nation, none of those numbers with the Secretary of State has reconciled. Every county that offers their numbers, they don't reconcile. None of those numbers make any sense. So we're just wanting to take a look at it and just give all the information. We believe people are smart enough. We the people. This whole thing has been flipped over. Thank goodness for this COVID mess, because now we know that we're in charge. Mm-hmm. There's new rules, new management. The new rules are the Constitution. The new management is us.
Yeah. Well, and the bottom line is, because I have people call me all the time and, you know, the Constitution's being shredded and it goes from there. Right. And then at the end of the conversation, and by the way, I stopped voting because it doesn't matter. Right. And I'm like, you are aware that they don't need to cheat if they can get you not to vote, right?
Right, exactly.
I'm like, you can't just not vote.
That's
that
true.
Isn't one of the choices.
Right.
So whether you love the machines, you hate the machines, they're in, they're out, they're up, they're down, volunteer to be a poll watcher or a poll worker, mm-hmm. however you want to do it. Volunteer to get involved in the process, but for heaven's sakes, you got to cast a ballot. I mean, I want them to work really hard.
Yes.
If they're going to cheat.
We go in, well, we spent lots of hours in there ourselves, and they just, we go in and,
you know, whatever people need to do to feel good about it, but you can't just sit, you can't just sideline.
Yeah.
Because the bad part is, you look at the recall of Newsom. They all signed the petition to get him recalled, and then they didn't go vote.
Right.
They didn't vote him out because people said, well, it's not going to matter. And I'm like, well, it didn't because you didn't vote.
Well, and guess what? Dr. Frank says that he was recalled. So those numbers
they
are coming out
it.
Tuesday as well.
He stole it back.
But when you look at the numbers of Republicans, if we want to just be partisan here, if you look at the numbers of Republicans that did not vote in that election, it was staggering.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
they just didn't vote.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just don't vote.
Well, the apathy, you know, has gotten to a point.
Well, they
where
think it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really apathetic because okay, you could classify it as that, but they really do care. They're just demoralized.
Sure.
And so you have you know, we have like news anchors that'll bring candidates on and say, oh, the GOP is screwing them because they're promoting somebody else instead of that person. But then when you get the detail about the district that they're in, it was Biden up 5.7 over Trump in that district. So it leans Dem. The Democrats are a real strong candidate, and the candidate that maybe they want is really extreme and isn't going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so then it's like, oh, the rhinos are in charge. Well, then, of course, all the Republicans say, oh, the Republicans are all bad, so we're not voting for them either. And it comes, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we have to be a little bit smarter than
And I often say that from the rear end view, a rhino and an elephant look the same from the rear end. They both have tails and they look the same.
But the criteria that we're using for, you know, so-and-so's a rhino is like not, you know, people don't know enough in most cases about how the politics are played, and they're not looking at the detail.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't like what that person says, therefore they're a rhino. It's like, that actually isn't how that mm-hmm. works exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And 100% of the time, the Democrats vote with the Democrats. So you'll have like a Susan Collins or whatever, or Murkowski, some of these folks who will vote with the Democrats periodically. And you're going to have some that they both parties vote for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's crazy to think that, you know, the people in majority are the only ones get a bill. But.
Right. And all we're asking for is a free and fair election. And what that may mean
and that's super important.
To turn off the electronics. Go ahead, let's turn off the Dominion machines and unplug them and melt them down and make prison bars real quick.
Well, we were always able to vote on election day and have the results that night.
Right. Right.
Or first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
The results were in.
One day voting.
And now it's weeks and weeks and weeks
and
it takes to get everything adjusted.
Well, the
mail-in
votes changed everything because they send them out early. They tell everybody to vote early. It's it's all a scam.
Right.
It really, truly is a scam. Mm-hmm.
But then our guys didn't trust them, so a lot of them shredded them. So they went to the polls. If your clerk was doing their job, they can't take your mail in.
Right.
I mean, they can't just run your ballot because they can't verify your mail in ballot.
Right. You need a precinct ballot.
It isn't coming in too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so people,
it's a mess.
Yeah, if you get the mail-in ballot, you got to take it with you to the polls if you want to vote at the polls.
Right.
Right. And then they void it out or they surrender it. And so, so what we're learning is what doesn't work. And so what we want to go back to is the simplicity of one-day voting. Use a voter ID, you know, all the things, just no machines, no mail-in ballots, precinct ballot. Let's vote in our precincts.
It always
again.
Worked before.
Yeah, look at that.
It worked pretty
one
well.
Day. Yeah, let's vote like the Amish. Real simple.
Yeah.
In our garages, 1,000 in a precinct. We can cast and count them one day. We can have cameras watching. Oh, now they're counting them. You know, whatever it takes to simplify this so we know that our vote was cast and counted and chosen for the one that we chose.
Right.
It's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's nice to know. I mean, I know a lot of people still don't trust the system, mm-hmm. and they feel like nothing's been done to change it. Right. So our next elections are going to go the same way because we got the same machines, mm-hmm. we got the same process, are going to steal it again. It's nice to know. We are working on it,
yep.
and there are some changes being made,
right.
and it doesn't necessarily have to be the same outcome.
Right, and there's a chance there may not be an election in November because this is so big. This mm-hmm. is nationwide. Every county, they're inviting the sheriffs to come in and investigate this. We may put a stop to all this until things can change. This is like Tiananmen Square when the guys would stand in front of the tanks
yeah.
and said no more, and they got crushed. You know, we're kind of like standing there, we don't want machines. We want to be able to do hand counting, precinct, you know, voting, just like they do in France. They took away their machines. They did it all in one day. Millions of people, millions of votes yep. were counted. We can do that here.
That can be done.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
So that is September 13th, 6 p.m., 621 Twinview Boulevard, which is?
It's at the Hillside Church. You go to Waterworks
Hillside
Park
Church.
And go up the hill. Very good. Thanks so much for your time.
I knew it was a church. I just didn't have the name, yeah. so I should write it down in case somebody calls or asks.
Yeah. Doors open at 5:30. Come and hear for yourself. Get the information. And then get a game plan going forward, what we can do, an action plan to make
right.
this happen.
Right.
Very
How
good.
We can actually stop the machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the key. I know that there's a number of sentiment with the Board of Supervisors. A number of them don't like them. They don't want them. But
they've signed 10-year contracts, mm-hmm. and they're on the hook for it. Mm-hmm. So they've got to figure out how to get out of that.
And whistleblowers.
Cases.
We're inviting all the whistleblowers to come forth.
And Dr. Douglas Frank is obviously a smart guy. I meant to bring that up because he's wearing a bow tie.
He's so brilliant.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
the only people who wear bow ties
amazing.
Are like wicked smart people.
Yeah.
And
super smart.
And the bow tie is multicolored
yeah.
and a bow tie. So he's
yeah.
got to be extra.
Oh,
and
he's
he is
a physicist as
yeah.
well as.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
He kind of looks like Bill Nye the Science Guy,
yeah.
only he's actually a scientist and he's not a lefty weirdo pushing global warming.
Exactly.
So mostly the same, but completely different.
Yeah.
The same, but different. Yeah. I want to invite you guys to come
yeah.
and listen.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You'd be a great voice.
I mean, Bernie that night, so I'll have to watch you on the rerun, but as they say. But thanks very much for having that, and we really appreciate it.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. Absolutely. Right.
So if anybody has any questions, they can call us. Everything's at wethepeopleradio.us, and we'll post the flyer. Shoot me one more because I wrote on mine. I'll scan it and put it on the site, so you will have it.
That's
Very
wonderful.
Good, Aaron.
Thanks
All right.
so much.
Well, thanks
thanks
for coming
you guys.
In, guys.
Appreciate
yeah.
it.
Thank you, guys.
Great information.
All right, we're going to scurry to a quick break, and we're going to come back with Bruce Sackman. So you're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Look at Billy's all over it today.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
It's funny listening to that song in high school, and here we are playing it on the radio.
Well, how old are you?
I'm wicked old. Actually, I turned 61 right after we had the first show with Mr. Sackman.
Man,
as a matter of fact,
I thought I married a younger woman.
You did.
Oh.
That makes you extra super wicked old.
How? Thanks, Aaron.
You're welcome, Bill. All right. So our guest, Bruce Sackman, he was with us on August 21st, just in case you didn't know when my birthday was. August 21st, he was with us, and he had the most, if you didn't hear that show, it's linked up on the website, it's free to listen to, and I'll put the link on this page. I'd forgotten today, but I'll put it on there. The book is Behind the Murder Curtain, and so we kind of talked about that, but then he had a whole bunch of other information he wanted to give us, but this book was specifically about when veterans hospital patients on the road to recovery suddenly die in increasing numbers. It's up to the VA special agent in charge, Bruce Sackman, to find out why. His shocking discovery rips open the hidden world of what goes on behind the bedside curtains when a killer doctor or nurse decides a patient must die. And I don't know. Anybody who watches true crime knows that that stuff actually happens. But he was special agent in charge with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the Office of Inspector General. And just for people who don't deal with that stuff very often, every department has their inspector general. So he would have worked specifically on VA things. He was in the Criminal Investigations Division in the Northern Field Office until May of 2005. He did that for 32 years. And in his capacity, he was responsible for all major criminal investigations involving VA from West Virginia to Maine. And during his tenure, he was involved in hundreds of investigations involving allegations of fraud, corruption, false claims, thefts, patient assaults, pharmaceutical drugs, and suspicious hospital deaths, which kind of wound up making him, well, he wound up being a licensed private investigator in New York City specializing in healthcare-related matters and directed major investigations for a large New York metropolitan regional healthcare system after he had left the VA. So he is also the president of the Society of Professional Investigators in New York from 2010 to 2019. I bet that was a... I bet the contacts made there were super, super interesting. And he's a frequent lecturer all around the world on the idea of medical serial killers, which is something that hopefully most of us never encounter.
Yeah, if you ever end up in a hospital, don't be afraid if they pull the curtain. I mean, nothing to worry about. Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. Move along. You'll be fine.
Hide under the bed.
Do you have a will?
Yank out your IV and run.
So, Bruce, you had all sorts of experience. And since it was September 11th today, you said you had experience with that. So we have no plan for what to tell us. So you can start wherever you'd like.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me back.
Really, you're such a fun storyteller. We were like, man, we could have him on every week. He could just come on and tell us stories.
Well, as you said, today is September 11th, and being a New Yorker and being in the government at the time, I do have a 9/11 story I'd like to tell because I was actually there at Ground Zero, and then I worked later going through the debris at the World Trade Center. But actually, the story for me begins, and I can't recall if it was September 9th or September 10th, but on that day, the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association had an award ceremony, and they actually held it on a boat that went around Manhattan. And the award ceremony was for myself and the agents that were involved in that Dr. Swango case that we spoke about last time, that VA doctor who had murdered a number of his patients out in Norfolk, Long Island.
And just for those who didn't hear the first show yet, his nickname?
00 Swango, licensed to kill.
00 Swango. Oh, my God, you cannot make that up. So sorry.
No, sorry, you cannot make that up. So we're on the boat, and there's an award ceremony, and it's going around Manhattan. And as it's sailing around Manhattan, there's the World Trade Center. And I'm speaking to an FBI agent who was on board the boat, and he says, you see, Bruce, they tried to knock those towers down, but we stopped them, and it didn't happen. And this was September 9th or September 10th. And I remember seeing those towers all lit up, and I thought, oh, that was great. That was great. Well, it was either the next morning or the day after. I'm in my office at the VA, which is about a mile from Ground Zero. And I'm on the phone speaking to someone who's heading up my Boston office. And my assistant comes in and he says, Bruce, you know, a plane just hit the World Trade Center.
Oh,
well,
wow.
I thought, like just about everybody else, well, it must have been a small plane. It was such a beautiful, clear day. I couldn't even imagine it. He says, no, Bruce, I think you better hang up and come out and take a look at it. So we go downstairs from my building, and we have a direct view of the World Trade Center. And we see, you know, we see the fire, and, God, you can see people jumping.
Oh, my gosh. How far away were you actually from the World Trade Center?
About a mile away.
Uh-huh.
And about a mile north. And then we saw the second plane hit. And when the second plane hit, it became kind of apparent to us that this was no accident. So he said, well, what the heck do we do now? You know, what do we do? We're the Inspector General or the VA. I mean, this is not something we even think about, let alone get involved with. So my first thinking is, let's go over to the local VA hospital, which is on 23rd Street and 1st Avenue, and see if we could help. And we sat there and we waited, and only a handful of people actually showed up at that hospital. Really nothing. But what was really strange is that from my office, you could see crowds of people walking north towards Penn Station, which is on 34th Street. And they weren't screaming or yelling, and they weren't even running by the time they got my office. It looked like something out of a horror movie. Many of them were actually covered in white soot, and they were just walking in total shock. There were hundreds of people in total shock just walking north, not talking, not saying a word, just in total shock walking north. I'd never seen anything like it before. It was something out of a horror movie.
Wow.
So the next day, pack up the agents, and we go down to Ground Zero. Now, if you're familiar with the city, you couldn't get south of Canal Street because the police wouldn't allow you, and you certainly couldn't get down there without a mask and boots. But since we all were federal agents, they allowed us to go in. And I recall seeing the firemen, and some of them were just sitting there by themselves, also in total shock. And I wanted to go over and say something to them, but, you know, I couldn't get the words out. I just couldn't get the words out. I didn't know what to say to these guys. They had lost so many of their brothers. Mm-hmm. It was just such an incredible sight, and it was incredibly dangerous to be down there, too. I must tell you, there were live wires popping all over the place, and there was so much soot and dust. It was really, really a terrible, terrible sight. So, you know, what's going to be the role of the VAOIG in this? I mean, you know, we're not first responders, and we're not construction workers. So what we wound up doing, actually, is sometime later, most of the debris from the World Trade Center got shipped to a landfill in Staten Island. And it was on top of a mountain. And I remember the first time I went there, the sanitation workers at the bottom said, hey, Bruce, you're going up there? We don't even go up there. There's methane gas. It's all kinds of terrible things up there. But we went up there. And to see the debris was really incredible. You saw fire trucks that were flattened like pancakes. Can you imagine a fire truck being flattened like a pancake?
Yeah.
And all the vehicles down there, and it was terrible. And our job, along with many law enforcement people, was to go through the debris. When we first went up there, there was nothing. I mean, guys didn't even have tetanus shots. There was an Army National Guard tent, like a MASH tent, and there was practically nothing up there. By the time we left, a year later, there was so much up there, I thought they were going to build condos up there. They had so much equipment up there.
Mm-hmm.
But initially, there was nothing there. And it was extraordinarily dangerous. I mean, you could be working there, and you couldn't even hear some of the machinery, and you would turn around, and there's like a backhoe right behind you. And the federal agents, we were responsible for going through the debris of Building 7, because Building 7 was the federal building. That's where the federal agencies were in. And as you're going through the debris, you would see things like copies of tax returns. You would see personal items like old transistor radios. Occasionally, you would see a badge.
How badly damaged was Building 7?
Oh, it was completely destroyed. And luckily, I don't believe anybody actually got hurt in that building, because that wasn't one of the first buildings to come down. You know, eventually after the towers came down, some of the other buildings started to come down, and that was Building 7, which was one of the smaller buildings. So we were responsible for going through the debris, and there was a tent set up with forensic experts. And if you saw something that you thought could be a body part or you weren't sure what it was, you would actually bring it to that tent of forensic experts. They would look at the debris, and then they would make a determination as to whether it was human or not, because there were a couple of restaurants there as well. So, you know, it could be some animal, it could be fish, it could be God knows what. I mean, we really didn't know for sure. So we would bring it to the tent, and there was so much debris, and it was so dirty and filthy there that at the end of our tour, we had to turn in all of our federal vehicles. They couldn't be used anymore because all of a sudden the dirt just clinged itself to the bottom of the vehicle and it couldn't be removed. When I left that place working, I had to leave the windows of my car open because you could smell the debris. You couldn't keep the windows closed in your vehicle.
Wow.
And so I worked there on and off for a year. Couple of times a month for a year. But there were some men and women who were there every day for an entire year. I don't
wow.
know if they're still alive, to tell you the truth. I don't know if these men and women are still alive.
Sure.
I know the Secret Service and the NYPD, they had people there all the time. It was so incredibly unhealthy.
Oh, yeah. Many of those have died since. They've died from inhaling.
Exposure to all the chemicals and the...
Oh, yeah. So I go to my 9/11 physical. I just had it a week ago, in fact. Every year I go to 9/11 physical because I have some glass charge in my lungs from working there. You know, but believe me, compared to how other people suffered, I consider myself very, very lucky. Very, very lucky that's all I have. And it was an incredible story. You know, one thing the VA did, and I bet people don't know this, because there was such a lack of medical gear and equipment and trained medical personnel, the VA actually had like a mobile health unit, and we drove that unit up to the top of the mountain, and we set it up there, and VA employees were actually given tetanus shots and masks and equipment, and the VA, this is not the ID, but the actual VA hospitals themselves, really did a super job in helping. You know, and technically it wasn't directly a VA matter, but we were all in this together.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it was quite an experience. And inevitably, I run into somebody who I work with who has some serious medical problems as a result of working there. Like I say, I consider myself one of the lucky ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had some friends, some coworkers that have very, very, very serious problems. So we hope to God this never happens again. And we hope that our government that keeps its eyes open and is protecting us from this happening again. But it was really a horrific experience. Even for those of us in the Inspector General community who never expected to be involved in something like this.
Was it just because you were really close? You know, you were just right there?
Yes. You know, that's certainly part of it. But almost all the IDs in the city of New York step forward in one capacity or another to help. And it was, I tell you, I actually hated going to do this work. I mean, I hated going up to Staten Island a couple of times a month and going to the top of that mountain and going through the debris. Not only was it depressing, it was very hot and unhealthy, and I would feel it in my chest for 3 or 4 days afterwards. After I worked up there in Staten Island, I would actually feel it in my chest for 3 or 4 days.
Mm.
You do what you have to do. Certainly nothing anybody ever signed up for.
Well, yeah, nobody expected anything like that, and you don't know how you'll react.
Then, you know, sometime later, I actually brought the Inspector General of the VA down there, down to Ground Zero, to look for himself. Now, he used to be the Deputy Director of the Secret Service, and I'll never forget this. He turned to me and he said, "Hey, you know, Bruce, if the FBI had been doing their job, this would have never happened." I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. You know, I don't know. But I remember him saying that to me. He was not a big fan of that agency.
he's probably having a good chuckle these days. He's probably the guy making those memes with all of them wearing the dresses from Melania Trump's closet.
Well, you know what? Since we're on the topic of FBI, I'll give you my personal opinion on that. Okay, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Yeah, we like
this
your personal
is my personal opinion.
Opinion
of the FBI.
Well, yeah, we have plenty of time to attack you later. Go ahead.
The FBI. You know, they're the largest federal law enforcement agency. They have some truly outstanding agents. I mean, there was one guy that I worked with. It's in the book. I think he was the best agent I ever worked with from any agency at all. But that being said, the managers set the tone.
Yes.
Okay? And if you remember... During the impeachment, when that guy Sprock, the FBI agent,
mm-hmm.
got up, and that was the most arrogant and obnoxious testimony I have ever heard in my life. Well, that's what I went through sometimes in my dealing with the FBI management. Not the street agents, not the agents, but the managers, because the managers set the tone, and some managers will set the tone like, you know what, guys and girls, I want you to work with other agencies. I want them to be part of the team. I want this to be a collaborative effort. Sometimes. Some of the managers, and I can imagine this guy's book was one of them, say, hey, we're the FBI. We're better than everybody else. We don't need to work with them. We take information from them. We don't give them anything. And I used to have a case, you know, that required a number of agencies, and people would call me up and they'd say, hey, Bruce, before we get involved in this case, is the FBI involved? And I'd say, yes. And they'd say, that's nice. We're not interested.
We're
because
out.
It depended on the supervisor who sets the tone. And unfortunately, the FBI, at least then, I can't say today, but then, they didn't all have that attitude of let's all work together. And that was very harmful, I think, to a number of investigations. And I'll never forget the arrogance of some, not all, but the arrogance of some of the managers that I had to deal with. And some of, you know, in the FBI, there were some teams, some groups in the FBI that wouldn't even talk to other groups in the FBI.
That's true leadership there.
I'm praying that things are better now and that the people that are in the leadership position now, although I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I was going to say, in imaginary land, that's probably happening.
Let's all work together.
Yeah.
Just terrible. Well, let's give us a moment to ponder that. Take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Bruce Sackman. And you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Justice will be served and the battle will rage. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. And you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. 'Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly. Well, the eagle's been flying slow, and the flag's been flying low, and a lot of people saying that America's fixing to fall. But speaking just for me, and some people from Tennessee, we got a thing or two to tell you all. This lady may have stumbled, but
she ain't never failed. And if the Russians don't believe that, they can all go straight to hell. We're gonna put her feet back on the paths of righteousness, and then God bless America again. And you never did think that it ever would happen again. In America, did you? You never did think that we'd ever get together again. We're damn sure fooled you. We're walking real proud and we're talking real loud again. In America, you never did think that it ever would happen again.
Just thought I'd do the 9/11 songs that all have swears in them.
Swears.
Just like pull them all together. Just bookend them. Get it all out of the way. Liam had a question for you. Our engineer, he was in there shooting me messages, and I was like, you ask him.
So, yeah. Bruce, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Was there a role the VA was able to play in helping workers get medical help, like post-cleanup, or was there an organization established that was able to do that?
Oh, you're talking about after 9/11?
Correct.
Oh, yeah, no, after 9/11, there was a bill passed that gave health care benefits to not only the first responders who were there, but anybody who was actually down in that area at the time. And so there's money available and there's health care available. So the health care that I get as a result of being down at 9/11 is not from the VA at all. It's a government paid-for program through private hospitals. So to Mount Sinai Hospital in Manhattan. Now I actually go to Stony Brook out on Long Island. But these are all programs that are paid for by the government, and they're excellent. They're really excellent programs.
Cool.
Yeah, I know that. There were plenty of people that needed help after that, that's for sure.
Oh, man, I tell you something. When I sit in the waiting room, I consider myself so lucky because I see and I hear how these other men and women are suffering as a result of this. It's heart-wrenching,
really.
And it really is. So I'm so happy that the government came out with these programs to pay for their medical care, and some of them are financially compensated as well in other ways. That's not something I need or desire, but for those people who really need it and deserve it, it's just a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Now, in the scope of things, you were where in your career path? Had you already been chasing down the medical serial killers at that point?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? It was a contest from the 90s until I retired in 2005. So, yeah, it was right in the middle of some investigations that we had involving medical serial killers and the whole host of other crimes that could be in a hospital. And there are many. I could talk about a few if you'd like. There are many crimes that occur in hospitals, unbeknownst to most people, I would say.
Okay. Go ahead and scare us.
All right. Well, look. You know what? I always say, you remember that song, "There's No Business Like Show Business"? Well,
yeah.
I think when I think of hospitals, I say there's no business like the hospital business. You know, it's
somehow I see that as a like a Mel Brooks sort of take off when like the producers, you know, maybe.
right. But you know, seriously, it never closes. You were there when you first opened up your eyes, and you'll probably be there when you close them for good. And you know, listen, you are thousands of items from the most advanced scientific equipment on the planet to Band-Aids and diapers. And it's staffed by, you know, very highly educated and dedicated employees, many who have sworn an oath to perform their duties with compassion and integrity, and they do. You know, hospitals are part of our nation's critical infrastructure. It's the most highly regulated industry outside of the nuclear regulatory industry.
Wow.
And there are a whole host of federal and state agencies sorry to come in the hospital and do investigations and reviews. So what can go wrong? Plenty. I mean, plenty to go. Executive officers of hospitals, I have to take off my hat to them because their responsibilities are like seemingly endless. You know, every day they discuss matters of life and death, safety of patients and staff. But, you know, recently the big issue now is the security of patient information, you know, personal medical and financial data. It's got to be made impenetrable to hackers, right, in today's electronic internet-based environment. Now also you have an inventory of narcotics, right, and other drugs can be very dangerous in the hands of drug-seeking individuals. You've got all kinds of financial problems because you're not making money off of Medicare and Medicaid, that's for sure.
So well, you try to offset. And then you had all the crazy incentives for the COVID thing.
You're competing against other hospitals and universities. You're often forced to merge with other medical centers because you can't afford to make it on your own.
Right.
You hope the bidding process for all of this is good. You know, you require three bids. I hope that the bidding process is honest. Not often. Often it isn't. Then you have foreign nations and competitors who are trying to steal your research.
Yeah.
Just think about all that could go wrong. And then we throw in the serial killers, and then we throw in the nurses or doctors who may be intentionally harming people, putting aside the whole malpractice issue. And then one day you get hit with a pandemic. How's that a job for you, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the incentives for that really... It really pushed them to cheat.
It could go wrong. And I'll give you an example of some of the cases. Some of the cases I had both in the government and in the private sector. And some of them were very, very small and simple, and some of them are extraordinarily complex. You know, one of the things we was the theft of these copays. You know when you go to the doctor or hospital, you have to pay these annoying copays, you know, $25, whatever. And, you know, many times people will pay with cash and they'll get a little receipt and they'll put that receipt in their pocket. Well, we had so many cases of employees who were stealing those copays. It was really terrible. You know, something about cash that makes an otherwise honest person sometimes become dishonest.
Wow.
And we had so many cases of this where employees sometimes worked 15, 20 years and they got caught stealing copays, cash copays. And, you know, the reason for that being is that many times the hospitals who were short-staffed, they would have the same person collect the cash, post the payment, deposit the money. There was no second pair of eyes. And the next thing you know, money is missing. And I remember one case we had. The department manager, he was very, very fond of one of his employees. I think his name was Bobby, so it doesn't make a difference. And he handled these cash transactions from beginning to end, and we wanted no one to help him. He was the first person in the office and the last person to leave at the end of the day. He would never take a vacation. If he had time off, he would come into the office after hours to make certain all the transactions were completed. What a great employee, huh? All cash was supposed to be deposited with the hospital's agent cashier. Interestingly, the agent cashier had confided in me that he had never received any cash deposits from Bobby at all and assumed that the department was not collecting cash from the patients.
Wow. Sounds like Bobby got sloppy.
Yeah, well, you know what? Bobby took the hospital for $10,000 in copays, in little copays.
Like 30 bucks a crack.
$10,000. What's that?
Yeah, like 30 bucks a crack, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, because if you think about it, how many times have you paid a copay and you got that little yellow receipt and you put it in your pocket, and then if 3-4 months down the road, you saw a bill for $20 or $25 from the hospital, are you going to be able to produce that little yellow receipt? You know, most people don't.
Yeah, probably not.
That's
but there's
true.
Always somebody, bless their hearts, there's always somebody that keeps that receipt. And then we went into the hospital and they said to me, hey, Mr. Sackman, here's my receipt right here. And I remember exactly who I paid that $25 to. That guy Bobby in his department.
Uh-huh.
And that's one thing led to the next, and that's what puppy arrested and charged with stealing $10,000 in copay. But the hospitals always will collect cash because they feel that there are some people in the community that don't have credit cards and they want to have to pay by cash. So as long as they accept cash, it was a real annoying problem. You know, not a major problem, but a real annoying problem. But we had one very, very interesting, unique problem involving cash. Now, have you ever seen that wonderful movie, Coming to America, with Eddie Murphy?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Now, recall that Eddie Murphy's father, he was the king of an African nation, and in a scene very similar to that, he would enter the medical center. Now, this African king, and this is a true story, this African king was very fond of a particular physician we had in our hospital system. He would bring his family for daily visits to the physician for complete medical workups. It was great. You know, because the king was a foreign dignitary, his visit would even be preceded by an inspection by the Secret Service. So it was right out of the movie. You know, the Secret Service would pull up, the king would pull up, go see the doctor, his family would see the doctor. And because he doesn't have, you know, health insurance, like American health insurance, so he had to pay the bill in cash. And if you're going to pay in cash, the hospital actually required that you paid in advance. So the king himself, well, he doesn't handle the cash, so he had a money man. And the money man opens up a briefcase right in the medical clinic and is handing out all the cash to one of the employees to pay for everything and leaves. And he's given a handwritten receipt. All right?
Well, Bobby said his sight's too low.
The king was happy he's getting great, great care. And then during the course of an audit, we can't find the cash. So what the hell happened to all this cash that the king's money man given out to one of our employees? So we find out it was actually the manager of the department who herself took it upon herself to collect that cash, all right? And when she went into the system, oddly enough, she didn't indicate that cash was collected. She indicated that it was all done by credit card. Credit card? No, the king doesn't play by credit card. He had his money man come in, he opened up the suitcase. So where was it? So eventually, the supervisor had confessed that there was so much cash that she took the money herself, went into the system, and indicated it was a credit card transaction, hoping that she wouldn't get caught. She stole $50,000. $50,000.
Wow. She should have played the long game like Bobby, 30 bucks at a time.
Hey, look, you know, if we have to contact the king and tell him about this $50,000, I mean, you're going to create an international incident here. And she got really, really scared, and then she finally confessed. But we always had this thing with cash in all the hospitals. It was an interesting problem. I'll tell you, also on rare occasion, and this is a sort of somewhat humorous story, we had this neat case of insurance fraud. Now, you're familiar with this gastric bypass surgery, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, not intimately, thank God, but yes, it sounds ghastly, just like its name. hey, Bruce, why don't we wait until after the top of the hour so that we don't mess up and do like a magic trick and saw your story in half?
Oh, okay, definitely.
The news people are funny that way. They like to get their news at the top of the hour in. We'll be right back, though. Our guest is Bruce Ackman, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
People riding the fence, you're either riding with us or you're riding with them. Make up your mind which side you stand. If you ask me, this whole world is gone to hell. I speak the truth, but these days the truth won't sell. I bleed red.
give my life. This place called USA.
Today is September 11th, 2022, and you can find that on the archives, actually, always, at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, our sponsor this hour, Aaron, is Pappy Machinery.
We never get sick of that.
No.
Everybody else probably does. They're like, oh, God, they're doing it again.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Sorry.
Yeah, Pappy Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer, and anything John Deere you need, you go up and see them or give them a call. They got tractors, mowers, implements. They also do full service parts for other brands. So go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And you can also catch them on the web at PappyMachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
And there you have it. Do you guys sing?
We will.
Do you dance?
Again, if it's in the quote, yeah, we'll show for you.
Yeah. I just want to make
sure. I don't have any of Melania's dresses to wear, but it's probably going to have an impact. Yeah.
You guys are going to have to make some friends at the FBI.
Yeah, maybe.
That's where all the good stuff happens.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, okay, Bruce, we're back. And and so now we don't have to mess up your story.
Okay. Well, I was going to somewhat humorous story.
We love humorous.
But it involves insurance fraud and involves gastric bypass surgery.
So you must be a hell of a comedian because that's a tough setup right there.
Yeah, that is.
Well, you know, look, it's a weight reduction procedure, right, that's covered by insurance companies for individuals. And this is the key, really, who have failed to lose weight through conventional means like dieting. Now, in order to get the insurance companies to cover this, I don't know if it's still true today, but it was true when this case was ongoing, is that you had to show that you accomplished, or at least attempted to accomplish, traditional ways of losing weight, diet, exercise. You went to physicians. All of this had to be documented so that the insurance company would now say, okay, as a last resort, you could have this gastric bypass surgery. So this woman is working in one of our hospital departments, and, you know, she's overweight, and she goes in for the bypass surgery, and she comes back, and she looks terrific. She looks fantastic. So two other women in the department who happen to be overweight as well, they go, wow, you look really great. How do we get this bypass surgery? And she says, well, you know, it's a long process. You have to go to doctors. You need certifications. You need tests. You need all of this. And these two ladies said, I don't want to wait that long. It sounds like I'm going to have to wait almost a year for that. I want to look like you look now. So she says, well, look, I got an idea. Why don't you take all this paperwork that I have, all these tests and doctor visits and everything, and take my name off and put your name on and submit it to the insurance company. And let them know you'll get reimbursed and the insurance company will cover the procedure. They go, really? Yeah, really. So that is exactly what happens, all right? So one lady sends it to her insurance company. Another lady sends it to her insurance company. Next thing you know, this one office that had three overweight ladies now has three slim, beautiful-looking ladies, and they're as happy as could be. So the supervisor one day is going through the desk, not intentionally looking for any crime, just going through the desk looking for something, and she sees some paperwork to the insurance companies. It looks very familiar to her. At some point, it had to be passed through the supervisor. She says, wait a minute. These doctor's visits, these programs, I've seen this before. And even the dates kind of look familiar to me. So she calls me up. She says, Bruce, I don't know what's going on here. This might sound crazy, but we had three overweight ladies, and now we have three ladies that look terrific, and they all had insurance-covered bypass surgery, but I'm looking at the documentation, and something doesn't look right here. So I come down, take a look. Sure enough, you could see, when I pulled all the documentation, you could see it was the same, except the names were changed. And when I interviewed the lady, and the sad part is when I interviewed one of the ladies that submitted the fraudulent paperwork, she says, you don't know how this operation changed my life. I mean, it really saved my life. It changed my life. I said, look, I understand that, but why couldn't you do it the legitimate way? Oh, no, I couldn't wait. I was looking at my coworker. She looked so great. I felt so jealous. And the second lady, she tells me the same story. And finally, I interviewed the woman who went through it correctly but enabled the other two to commit the fraud. She said, well, I felt so sorry for them. They kept hounding me and badging me that I should help them, so I did it. Well, obviously, all three employees got fired. The one that actually submitted, the two that submitted the paperwork, they weren't charged, but the one whose paperwork was legit and gave them the paperwork to submit, she was actually arrested and charged with a crime, you know, with insurance fraud. I mean, she didn't go to jail or anything, but it was a very, very unique situation that we had in an office there. Well, now, as an example of insurance fraud, you know, another thing we had was because of all the expensive equipment we have in hospitals, periodically, this equipment would get stolen. And, you know, people don't know this, but organized crime, what they do is they will have people walk around hospitals, sometimes dressed as employees, even dressed in scrubs, and they look around and they see what equipment is not secured. Now, some equipment is secured very well, some equipment is not secured at all, and some is somewhere in the middle. And they would walk around and they would make notes to see what they could steal from the hospital and resell, because there are medical resellers out there, and I'll tell you how that works. Okay, so what happens, one of the hospitals in our system had 10 brand-new portable EKG machines, all right? But there was construction going on at the hospital, because hospitals, you know, they always have construction going on. So they said, well, look, we have these 10 brand-new EKG machines. What should we do with them? So I said, I had an idea. Look, we have a building across the street. It's not being used too much. Let's put them down there, and when the construction is done, we'll move it back. So they moved these 10 portable EKG machines into the basement of this building. And then when the construction is finally done in the new main hospital, somebody walks across the street and says, okay, it's time for us to install these new 10 EKG machines. And they go down and they say, where the heck are they?
Uh-oh.
They're missing. 10 EKG machines are missing. Where did they go? We know we brought them down here. Where did they go? So they call me up. And they say, Bruce, you know, a little embarrassing here, but we had 10 brand-new EKG machines, and we have no idea where they are. I said, all right, give me the serial numbers of these EKG machines. So they give me the serial numbers. I call up the manufacturer. I said, look, these are new machines. If anybody calls you because they have some warranty questions on these machines or any questions at all, and they give you these serial numbers, you call me right away. Well, sure enough, it didn't take long. And I got a call from the manufacturer, and they said, hey, Bruce, you know what? Somebody called about one of your machines. It's a medical reseller in Connecticut. Now, what is a medical reseller? A medical reseller will buy used or sometimes even new equipment that the hospital is accessing, and they resell it, and that's perfectly legal. But some of them, you know, engage in activities that's not really that legal because they don't really ask where it came from. You know, you got something, okay, we'll buy it and we'll resell it. So contact this medical reseller in Connecticut, and I say, hey, you know, you have a machine that was actually stolen from us. How did you get it? I'll say, oh, no, Bruce, this is what happened. We actually saw it for sale on eBay. So we bought it on eBay, okay? Okay, terrific. Contact eBay Security. eBay Security says, somebody, they had these 10 machines. They took pictures of these machines, and they put them out for sale, and they put them out for sale on eBay, and some people bought it. Well, who put that ad on? I want to know who put that ad on. Well, it's some guy in Long Island, and here's his address. So go visit the guy on the Long Island. I said, oh, I got this guy, right? He said, hey, Bruce, it's not me. It's not me. You see, I have a service. What I do is people bring product to me. I photograph it, and I put it on eBay for them. Okay, well, who came to you?
He's like a fence, an eBay fence.
To photograph and to put on eBay. And it turned out to be one of the hospital employees who had access to this equipment. And now it was interesting because there was construction going on. One weekend they had to shut off the electricity. So there were no cameras and there were no alarms. And he knew this. And he pulled up on a weekend with his van, loaded those EKG machines into his van, and took off. And we never recovered all of them. The reason why we didn't recover all of them is because some of them were bought as far away as Thailand. All right. So we recovered some of them, and he got criminally prosecuted, but we never actually recovered all of them. And there is a huge market out there for medical equipment, a huge market. So hospitals have to be very, very, very careful. But the latest and greatest times, as we move in and get even more and more serious, are all these internet-based crimes that actually involve hospitals, okay? And there are many, many of them, and some of them are very, very scary. Some of them even have to do with something as simple as employment. Now, this is what happened. I would get phone calls from people all over the country and saying, Mr. Sackman, we went online, we saw that your hospital had advertised the job, we applied for the job, and we were told that we got the job, and we were told that please supply their financial information so that, because they'd be working from home, and that the hospital would pay them through direct deposit. So they wanted all my account information, you know, where I bank, social security number, all that kind of stuff. And a number of these victims went along with it thinking they actually had a job at the hospital, when in fact it was totally bogus. And what's really sad is I had interviewed a number of victims who are actually the spouse of active duty military. And I don't know really why they got targeted. But their husband or their wife was away, and they were living on a military base, and they were looking to work from home. And they became victims of this scam, and some of them lost thousands and thousands of dollars. It's really very, very sad, you know, to see that. But now we have a situation where all the medical records are online. Everything is electronic, right? Which means that in the old days, you steal a medical record, you go to the file cabinet, and you take out the medical records, and you run. But now
you can get the whole
medical
room.
Record in the hospital can be hacked. And this is something that keeps hospitals up at night. And there have been a number of hospitals throughout the world, not just the United States, throughout the world, that have been subject to what we call ransomware. And this is the way it works. Guy's working at his computer, and all of a sudden on the screen says, you can't access the patient records anymore unless you pay this ransom. And you know what's very interesting, I find very interesting, is that the bad guys seem to know the amount of insurance coverage each hospital has for ransomware. So if the XYZ hospital has, let's say, $1 million coverage for ransomware, they'll ask for $900,000. If they have a $10 million coverage, they'll ask for $900,000. You know, they know exactly how much to ask for, which I found very, very scary.
Yeah, they're
able to get into the hospital systems, usually through some bogus email.
Sure.
You know, it says click here, and you're not supposed to click there. And the next thing you know, you're in the hospital system. And now the hospitals, all of a sudden, cannot access their medical records. Now, you know, it's one thing if an accountant can't access your records. It's another thing maybe if your lawyer can't. But if your doctor can't access your medical records, that could actually result in death. And there's a story in Germany. This happened not long ago. A patient's in an ambulance. He's on his way to the ABC hospital in Germany. All right? All of a sudden, the ambulance gets a phone call. Don't bring the patient here because we can't access our records.
Oh, wow.
All right? So the ambulance says, oh, my God, what do we do? Well, we have to take him to another hospital. It's like 30 minutes away. And the patient dies in the ambulance.
Oh.
So in this case, the hackers actually committed a murder because by not allowing the doctors to access the medical records and that patient to be brought to that hospital, that patient was actually murdered as a result of hackers. And, you know, we have all these other traditional hospital crimes like account takeovers, for instance.
Hold that thought, Bruce.
Okay.
We will come right back. And I found a little song for Pape Machinery, just for all those people that are thinking they might not need a tractor. I found a little song. This could be you.
Oh, they're going to love it.
This could be you. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Nothing left for my kids and my wife. Oh, I clung to that first cup of coffee, praying, God, won't you show me what's real? Out in the distance, I saw through the window a man on a tractor with a dog in a field. The dog walked just like he was smiling. The man drove like the world was all right. The tractor hummed on like part of a song that you sing to your children at night. His work was laid out there before him. In rows of green, his whole life was revealed. Oh, what I wouldn't give if I could just live like a man on a tractor with a dog in a field.
Well, she ain't into cars or pickup trucks, but if it runs like a deer, man, her eyes light up. She thinks my tractor's sexy. It really turns her on. She's always staring at me while I'm chugging along. She likes the way it's pulling while we're tilling up her land. She's even kind of crazy about my farmer's tan. She's the only one who really understands what gets me. She thinks my tractor's sexy. She thinks my tractor's sexy. She thinks my tractor's sexy.
Get a hold of Pape and tell him we have to pay a little extra this month. Holy mackerel.
I couldn't stop myself. How do you work "I think my tractor's sexy" into a story about hospitals and fraud and death and 9/11?
Maybe that's how they got to the hospital.
That's a stretch right there.
There you are. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Sorry, Bruce. Had to take a little departure there. Welcome to the West.
All right.
Everything else is on fire. We might as well talk about something fun, you know. Good Lord. So I said, hey, we need to take a quick break, then we'll come right back with. But then I started laughing about tractor songs, and I can't remember what we were talking about.
We were talking about the fraud case.
Oh, thank God, Bill.
The fraud case you were going to tell us about.
Well, we were talking about ransomware.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Most people don't know this, that many hospitals actually have established Bitcoin accounts with their attorneys, because in the event that they should be hacked, they want to recover their information as quickly as they can, and they will pay the ransom. All right. Now, the FBI will tell you, don't ever pay the ransom. Don't ever pay the ransom. Well, it's easy for them to say, because they don't have all these patients flying there, and we can't access their medical records. Now, hospitals will spend millions and millions of dollars on cyber defense, okay? But if you're a small little hospital in somewhere, you know, like the Sisters of Divine Intervention or something like that, and you could just barely keep the lights on, you're not going to have millions of dollars to spend in cyber defense. And that is really, really particularly scary. So this is something that worries hospitals all the time. And a number of hospitals, and I invite people to Google it and just see a number of hospitals around the world that have paid a lot of money to get their medical information back. And then when you get it back, the question is it the same? Has it been altered? Did they make copies of the information? I mean, it's pretty scary stuff. Really scary stuff that never existed before we went all electronic, you know, with all electronic records. And now, to scare you even more, is what I would call sort of the future of healthcare murders. And that's internet-based murders, because so many of the hospital devices are internet-based. And if it's internet-based, it can be hacked. And the manufacturers are not spending a lot of money on defense. They're just spending a lot of money on putting their product out and make it easy for doctors and others to manipulate these devices remotely, not really thinking enough about hacking. And let me give you an example of some devices. We have, like, drug infusion pumps delivering morphine drips, chemotherapy and antibiotics that could be remotely manipulated to change the dosage doled out to patients. Bluetooth-enabled defibrillators that could be manipulated to deliver random shocks to a patient's heart or prevent a medically needed shock from occurring. X-rays that can be accessed by outsiders working on a hospital's network. Even temperature settings on refrigerators storing blood, right? And drugs that can be reset, causing spoilage, and digital medical records that could be altered to cause physicians to misdiagnose, prescribe the wrong drugs, or administer unwarranted care. How does that sit with you?
Yeah.
And to add even more, because we're on a roll now, we have something known as the Internet of Bodies. Now, we've heard of the Internet of Things, you know, like everything is internet connected. But now we have something that's known as the Internet of Bodies, where all these devices that are either implanted or wearable are internet-based. And if it's internet-based, someone could hack in and change the setting. You know, Vice President Cheney had an internet-based pacemaker, and the Secret Service said, no good. No good, Mr. Vice President, because somebody could hack in and change that setting on your pacemaker and take you out. And this is a real concern, because more and more devices, whether they be implanted or wearable or actually in the hospital, are actually internet-based. Somebody printed an article a while back. It's entitled, Can Hackers Commit the Perfect Murder by Sabotaging an Artificial Pancreas? I didn't even know there was such a thing. But let me just read this to you. It says, deliberately wrong high glucose data sent to an unprotected mobile computing platform may cause the algorithm to deliver excessive insulin, whereas incorrect low glucose values could cause it to deliver too little. The researchers write, make the machine administer too little insulin and the blood glucose level may rise enough to send the patient into a ketoacidosis coma. Make it administer too much and the glucose falls into the brain, fails, causing the patient to faint or even die. This might seem to bad guys like the way to commit the perfect murder. And this, I fear, is the future of hospital murders, that somebody might be able to actually take out a patient just from sitting in their living room on their computer. Now, has this happened already? Don't know. Depends who you talk to, honestly. When I talk to my friends in the government, they say, bro, it never happened.
How do they know?
And then when I talk to an attorney I know who does a lot of these cases, he says, hey, Bruce, it has happened, but nobody wants to talk about it. Uh-huh. Nobody wants to admit it. So has it happened? I don't know. But one thing I do know, it can happen. Now, we were going to, right before COVID, we were going to have a conference at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in Manhattan on medical serial murders. And we had invited people from all over the world to come to this conference to speak about this problem of murders in our hospital. Well, one of the people that we had scheduled to speak was an IT guy who was going to give us a demonstration where he was going to set up a medical device on the stage and show you how he could remotely change the settings. So I know it can be done. Whether it has been done and actually killed somebody, I don't know. I really don't know. But that's really, to me, the future of healthcare murders and a real, real big problem for the hospitals going forward.
Sure. You know, and more medical devices are internet accessible. I know hearing aids are internet accessible.
Yes, they are.
Oh yeah, yeah. You can online and adjust your hearing aids. I just got a brand new CPAP machine. That CPAP machine can be accessed online and change the settings. Supposedly, by only a medical professional can do that. But they do it right online. They access your unit by serial number. They go in, they adjust the settings, and you're up and going. It sounds like a great deal, but I don't know now. I don't know. In the middle of your night, all of a sudden you can't breathe. Could be a problem.
Yes. And assuming that somebody does that, are they even going to be able to trace it back?
Well, that's the
who the perpetrator was. I'm not that confident.
Mm-mm.
I'm not that confident, and I speak to IT people all the time about this, and I'm not confident that they can. Now, I know there are conferences and a lot of discussions about security of these devices ongoing right now. Okay, so I feel good about that the problem is at least being discussed. How well it's being addressed, I don't know. You know, many times you don't put up that traffic light until some kid gets killed crossing the street, right? Then they put up the traffic light. Well, are they going to put up this security after somebody actually gets murdered through the internet like this?
Yeah.
I hope we don't wait that long.
Sure.
I honestly hope we don't.
Well, you look at the smart meters that they really foisted on Europe early on, and they can prevent you from running your washing machine, the smart appliances.
Oh, yeah, I just heard the other day that they
were able
to prevent
those from working, and they can change your thermostat.
Yeah, exactly.
So Gavin Newsom, in his fleece sweater, can tell you can only have it at 78 while he's chattering his teeth in his frozen palace, and Yeah. Meanwhile.
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 The serfs are sweating
serfs
it out.
Are sweating like to the oldies. Yeah. Yeah, because what was it, 122 here the other day?
Yeah.
Now we have 37% humidity, just to be clear. So you're doing a different kind of sweating, Bruce. We know that. I lived back there, and how well I remember. But when you see your thermometer say things like 122, it's like, wait a minute.
Wait, what? It went that high.
I always take a picture of it because it's just so weird. But, yeah, all that stuff.
That's pretty scary stuff, isn't it?
It is. It's super scary because
well, they can, you know. And I mean, look at what they've done with the internet. I mean, everything, not just medical devices, everything. You buy a camera for your house. You buy a Ring doorbell camera. Well, guess what? Anybody has access to that.
I won't let Bill have any of those things.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No Alexa. No. Nobody who. I don't want the appliance. The only thing I want to hear in our house is like our schnauzers. Like, that's it. No.
Well, do you remember the story the other day? Oh, maybe it was last year in the newspaper about how they were able to stop a car from running?
Oh.
That, yes, they were able to actually stop a car. And, you know, now with some of these self-driving cars, God knows what they'll be able to do.
Yeah.
Will they be able to make it turn right when it should turn left and go over?
Your mother-in-law pays a little extra money and you have to go to her house. You will be here for Thanksgiving or else. It is pretty freaky, though. I had somebody call me, I guess it was last week, and she was completely discombobulated. And she said, you're not going to believe it, but we had... she goes, I was on my computer and the thing came up. It looked just like Microsoft. And it said I had to call this number. And she goes, I called. And I'm thinking, oh, that's not good. And then they said, well, you know, your bank has been hacked. They charged, you know, a huge amount of money, blah, blah, blah. But it really looked super legit. And she had just picked the computer up the day before. And then she starts getting phone calls from these people in New York, oddly enough. And they were calling her repeatedly. And she said, wait, I have to go. I'm getting a phone call. And they said, don't take the call. Those are the hackers. They're trying to get to you. So she didn't take the call. Well, then the police show up at her door and said, you know, ma'am, could you come outside and leave your phone in there? And he said, you're on the phone with the hackers, and some people that track hackers are on the phone. They called us to get us to come over here to do a welfare check because they're trying to drain your bank account. You have to hang up with them. And it's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's getting pretty sophisticated.
I don't think the police have time for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is pretty sophisticated. Usually the police don't get involved until all the money's gone.
Yeah, there's been a crime.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought I'm going to check with those people because the $64,000 question was, how did they know that the hackers were targeting her?
Yeah.
Right? How do they know?
Right. Yeah, who's watching who?
And then they look up the town she lives in. They called the police department. They sent the police out there to check on her. But they were not a law enforcement agency. They were an international... like a consortium of a nonprofit that
tracks hackers.
Oh,
no kidding.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, I'm not a complete electronic dunce, but I don't know how they did that. So I thought that was all pretty darn weird, but you know that they're coming after us with all of this. We have to take one last quick break, but when we return, I would be curious to know where you think some of that's going based on the investigators that you're talking to, Bruce, with some of the personal medical devices and that kind of thing, and maybe what people can, like, watch out for just to kind of keep themselves out of the fight. But here in California, we don't have to worry about it because, you know, they're shutting our power off all the time, and we're not going to have cars and, you know, all of that. So it turns out that Journey wrote a song when I was in high school that... was kind of a prophecy type of a song. So we'll play that and we'll come right back.
All right.
You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I
Yeah, they do want to, they thought they wanted to be there. They thought the lights were just going to go, I don't know, lower or something. I think they weren't anticipating they'd be going out.
Yeah. But in California,
yeah,
don't worry about Thanksgiving because, you know, a lot of people don't know when to thaw their turkey. Hey, we got
PG&E's
you covered.
PG&E's going to do it for you.
Yep, they got it covered. They'll thaw your turkey for you.
That joke works every year, which is really frightening, actually.
Yeah.
So we realized during the break, Bruce, that we forgot to talk to you about the whole COVID thing. And all the crazy junk that was going on during that.
How many people got behind the curtain during COVID?
behind the curtain is a whole different meaning now.
That's a great question. So let's talk about COVID in the last remaining minutes that we have here. Number of hospitals were really inundated with patients during COVID. I could tell you my own experience, what I saw in the city of New York. If you recall, not only did the Navy have a hospital ship come here, but we had set up tents in Central Park to handle the patients, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a pandemic, you require a lot of staff. And one of the problems is some of the existing staff was getting sick as well. So you had to bring in people from all over, literally all over the world, that are willing to help. And when new people come in, especially during a pandemic, the hospitals will reach out to services to recruit people. And what kind of background investigation was done on these people? Well, many times it's not really that good because, you know, when the enemy's coming over the wall and you got to put troops up there to stop them, you don't have time to do a full background investigation on every soldier who's going to defend you. You're just happy you have a soldier there to stop the enemy from coming over the wall. So all of a sudden now, hospitals have a whole new group of people working there. Many of them are not familiar with that particular hospital system. They came from another hospital that maybe has another system for procuring drugs. So they're not really up to snuff on the current hospital. But look, it's a pandemic. They need people right away. So you know what they do? They recruit people, and they recruit these traveling nurses and, you know, and doctors, and the overwhelming majority of them are really outstanding. But this has sometimes been an opportunity for the less than outstanding to get reemployed in the hospital because of emergencies. And one of the last particular cases that I had worked on in the private sector involved somebody like this. It involved a traveling nurse. This nurse had been previously employed in Missouri, and her record said that she had resigned for personal reasons. But when you call down there, you find out that she was actually under investigation for diverting narcotics, but the new hospital in New York had no idea.
Yeah.
Because the agency never actually mentioned that, and I think that's come over a number of times. So she has this brief 8-hour orientation, and she's assigned to the emergency room. And she's very personable, and she invites some of her coworkers for breakfast. You know, they make a lot of money, these traveling nurses, and they get their room taken care of, and they deserve it. Believe me, they deserve it. And, you know, at first, and she's working in the emergency room. Now, at first, things seem fine. But then some staff had commented, this nurse seemed to be spending an inordinate amount of time in the medication room. Now, the staff assumed that this was because she was new and still learning the intricacies of a system she was unfamiliar with. And then one day, a staff member reaches for a vial of narcotics, and the cap had appeared tampered with. So she goes to the supervisor, and an inventory was conducted, and the second tampered vial was uncovered. And that's when those are the kind of phone calls that I get. And this is the way it works. You see, for narcotics to be withdrawn from the safe, first, a medication order from the physician must be safety issues, okay? Now, in case of an emergency, and this is where it gets a little dicey, an override can occur, and narcotics can be removed, but a physician's hand will eventually be documented.
Uh-oh, we're losing little bits of you, Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
Wait, you're cutting out. We missed that all that part right there.
All right, let me start again. I'm sorry.
Sorry about that.
For narcotics to be withdrawn from a safe, okay, a medication order from a physician must be issued. Now, in cases of an emergency, an override can occur, and narcotics can be removed, but a physician's order must eventually be documented.
Uh-huh.
If an override was not necessary, the transaction could be canceled. If the drugs had been removed, it would need to be wasted and witnessed. And it's rare for a nurse to access a medication via override and then cancel the transaction. But this nurse, this traveling nurse, because of the pandemic, was involved in a high percentage of override canceled transactions relative to her peers. So she had entered overrides for, now, if I remember this, hydromorphone, morphine, fentanyl, diazepam, and diazolam, as well as propofol, and something else, I can't even remember. It was a total of 11 vial syringes from the emergency department was identified as being potentially manipulated due to vial tops missing or visible puncture holes. And when tested at the pharmacy, these vial syringes contain less than their labeled amount of volume. Actually, she had taken the drugs to use herself and replaced it with sodium chloride. Now, sometimes the patients were in pain and they needed these drugs, but what they got instead was sodium chloride. They didn't actually get the narcotics, okay? And eventually she confessed, and then she left the hospital, and because of the pandemic and the lack of law enforcement, she wasn't actually brought to justice for almost a year after this happened. So where she worked after New York City and what else she did, I have no idea. Now, keep in mind that during the pandemic, family was not allowed in the hospital, okay? So now you have a situation where you have traveling employees, unfamiliar with the system, a very, very tiny minority may be intent on doing some bad things. And there's no family there to watch. The place is extraordinarily busy, and a lot of leeway is given to people who are brand new. So how many people actually died or suffered as a result of this, I really don't know. In Germany, there's a doctor that's being charged right now for murdering two COVID patients. In Canada, there's actually a person that was just arrested a couple of weeks ago for murdering some COVID patients. So I think we're yet to find out the true extent of what happened during this COVID emergency.
Yeah, having experienced that myself, when you go into one of those hospitals, the hospital I was in had a floor that was dedicated to COVID patients. You're in a room, maybe it was just me, but you're in a room by yourself. There's a limited amount of staff that is assigned to that floor. And you're on your own. There's no visitors. It was a hellish experience, to say the least.
Yeah.
And I could see where if you had staff that wasn't familiar with the hospital and, wanted to pull some shenanigans, it'd be so easy for them to float in and out of rooms and pull it off pretty successfully.
Yep. And I think we'll probably never know the extent of people that were harmed as a result of being in the hospital for COVID, but
I think as time goes on, we will learn more and more about it. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, the overwhelming majority of healthcare people were just so overworked, so overtaxed, and did truly the best they could do. But that gave an opportunity for that tiny, 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 tiny percentage of bad folks to get away with what they wanted to get away with.
Yeah. Yeah, because I know in our town, they actually got to a point where if you didn't get the vaccination, they were letting medical staff go and bringing in out-of-town staff. At one point, I think they brought in the National Guard, and people were working, you know, in National Guard capacity. You don't know who these people are. You don't know what their training is. And like you say, in a critical situation, you're just happy to have the help. It definitely, I think, left the doors wide open for somebody to come in and abuse the system.
Yep, it did. And I think now, going forward, we're going to start to uncover more and more of this. But the full extent, God only knows. Really.
Yeah, yeah. And you're right, too. The money is pretty unbelievable. I mean, not only did the hospital make a lot of money on COVID from the government, but I know somebody who knew a nurse that came from another town and went to work and worked overtime. And they made like a couple hundred thousand dollars in a very short period of time, you know, just doing the overtime and putting in the hours. You know, God bless them. But there was a lot of money changed hands on that deal. And I'm
well,
not
of
sure.
Course.
Well,
the
people who got people who got certain medications. Yeah. There was a lot of weird incentivizing, and you know, it always goes. It can go either way. It's good that if people didn't have coverage or whatever, that they all got treated. But then, did everybody just have COVID because it was so lucrative? And did we stall it out as long as we did? You know, you can make a case. You can make a case.
If you tested positive for COVID, no matter what all your other problems were. Hey, you could have went in there for bad dandruff. If you could have tested positive for COVID, you were a COVID patient.
Yep.
You know, you're going to get reimbursed under COVID.
Right.
And everybody who was in the hospital that tested positive, they were a COVID patient. And even if they expired many times for other reasons, you know, it was due to COVID. So the numbers are really not that accurate as well. And we see how many people died as a result of COVID. You know, many of them had other underlying illnesses, which was really the cause of death.
Yeah,
right. But it was financially more profitable to have the cause of death to COVID. So it was COVID.
Yeah. Well, I'd be really interested if you are still in contact with people who would be investigating those sorts of things. You know, as you learn more about that, if they want to say something or you want to... You ever want to come on and tell us about that? I know people would be very intrigued by that because, let's face it, everybody dealt with it at some level or another, and has their suspicions.
Oh, sure. And one of the good things that came out of COVID was we cured the regular flu. nobody got the regular flu after COVID showed up.
That's true. Problem solved.
Know, And you know that the seasonal flu. Yeah, I mean, people, you know, particularly elderly people, get the seasonal flu and die from it. But
not anymore.
Not anymore. No, we all die from COVID. it's messed up.
Aren't we a jaded bunch of jackals? There's a tremendous amount to look at in this, and you know, thank goodness you guys started looking. You know that you wound up looking at these medical serial killer people, because you know who knows how long they were operating before you showed up and finally did something about it. I hope everybody goes and reads the book. It's called Behind the Murder Curtain. Our guest has been Bruce Sackman, and we love having you on, Bruce, and we'll totally do this again. And we hope you're having a super day in New York and not sweating too much. We're going to go outside and do that ourselves right now. But
Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. And in honor of all the folks we lost in 9/11 and my mom a couple years ago, got a good song for you. Talk to you next week.
I need a sign. Let me know you're here. 'Cause my team